Hey, it's Jamie Sumner, left guard from 1994-95, and this is the Bunch of Nuts podcast with my boys, Dan and Cass. Go Bucks.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Bunch of Nuts podcast. I'm Dan. I am not here with Big Cass today. Instead, I am here with a fellow Silver Bulletin writer, Grant Kincaid. Grant, it's awesome to have you on the show finally. How are you doing today?
I'm doing quite well. How about yourself?
I'm doing good. I'm great. Ohio State just got two wins in basketball against Penn State and then IUPUI. I want to take a moment, though, before we get into that. Cass going to be here. He's dealing with some personal stuff. Cass, I love you, buddy, if you're listening. Heart goes out to you. Hope everything's well. But I do want to take this moment because Cass can't say it. I'm not a Bengals fan, but this would be Cass's moment to gloat. Bengals got their first playoff win in ages. I mean, what is it, since 1993 or?
91. So I am a Bengals fan. So they, in my lifetime, certainly in a never won playoff game in 8 attempts. So I have been through it in every way you could imagine. It's still something you have to process. But it feels good to be vindicated.
I'm still shocked. I mean, if anyone was going to pull it off, it would have been Joe Burrow. And I'm happy for all the Buckeyes on that team. Like, you know, Sam Hubbard, Isaiah Prince, just a great group of guys overall. I will put my hand up, though. I did not bet on the Bengals. I took the Raiders. So I'm the only one in Ohio that probably did that. I got burnt because of that. So wasn't a good week of betting for me, but moving on, I guess, Grant. Ohio State basketball. They play Sunday against Penn State. They win a pretty good Big Ten, you know, matchup, 61-56. And then they followed that up yesterday with a absolute trouncing of IUPUI, 83-37. Both games, though, Justin Ahrens combined for 6 points in both games. He shot 1 for 4 against Penn State and 1 for 5 against IUPUI. Both teams aren't barn burners. Given the recent play of Eugene Brown, do you think Ahrens should be seeing the same amount of minutes, or do you think he should have his minutes reduced?
I think in this current state, I don't see why you wouldn't do that. It's tough to see because I feel like Ahrens, he's kind of slowly regressed since he got on campus. Because, you know, his first year, he was kind of that 3-point spark plug off the bench.
Yeah.
We just kind of assumed that he would progress and get better and better. But he's not fitting in with whatever Holtman's trying to do right now. And with all of the lineups he's trying, I don't see why you want to give Brown more of a shot.
I mean, I like what I've seen out of Eugene Brown the last two games against IUPUI. Now, I mean, I will say it's IUPUI. They're 1-15 on the year. They're probably I think they are the worst team in college basketball by the rankings or the net rankings or whatever they do. But he had 14 points. He actually led the team in scoring. And then against Penn State, he had 6 points, but he was drawing a lot of fouls. So he was getting stuff done both sides of the court.
Yeah, they definitely need someone who can draw some contact and bring people to the ball because when Liddell isn't the focus, they don't have anybody else. And when you're not drawing attention to one guy, it's going to be really hard to get anybody open, especially the way, you know, college basketball is being played right now. So they definitely have to find that second option.
I agree. I mean, I think Zed Key is a really good option for us. Mm-hmm. I don't think we use him enough, to be honest. And I don't know if you watched at all on Tuesday night. It was Duke, Florida State. You might not have caught that, but I was just watching Duke play again, and obviously Ohio State, you know, took down Duke. And that number 15 on Duke, Williams, their center, he's a beast. And he was, you know, going up, dunking the ball basically every time he got, you know, near the rim. He was getting great alley-oops from Paolo, number five. And, you know, for the most part, when we played Duke, Zed Key dominated against him. I mean, the whole second quarter, that's kind of how Ohio State made the comeback. And I mean, Zed Key's not playing bad. He's against Penn State, had 10, IUPUI had 9. So it's not bad, but I think he is another option that I think we should be able to lean on more.
Yeah, it is an option if you can draw attention to the post and kind of use him as a facilitator when you throw it down there for him to kick it back out to, you know, whoever, which again, you know, you have guys like Arns who can't make anything. That's kind of a moot point. But I think he has a lot more potential in the post. Like you said, he started out the year incredible. Even in their loss against Xavier and some of those early on games, he could really assert his dominance down there. And he's really efficient down in the post.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely efficient. I almost feel like we're holding him back, though, at points. I feel like I think when it comes to the almost tournament time, I wouldn't be shocked if we used him a lot more. But right now, it does feel like we're kind of trying to find other playmakers. Like Branham, he's been okay for the most part, but he's so streaky. He's good for about 7 or 8 a game, no problem. But it's with Branham, it's if you can get that one, you know, 10-minute stretch out of him where he puts up maybe, you know, 10, 12 points and gets hot. I think that's kind of how we got to use him. Wheeler right now, he's the heart and soul of the team. He is in a boot, though. I mean, do you think we should be concerned about that?
It's hard to tell. I don't think it's ever good when someone's in a boot, especially if you're a basketball player. I haven't heard the extent to how badly he's hurt. I guess it's one of those things where we're about to be in the I mean, I guess we are in the heat of Big Ten play. So you want to make sure he's going to be healthy down the stretch, especially in the tournament. But I couldn't tell you how he's doing, which is unfortunate.
From my understanding, it's not serious because, I mean, it doesn't seem as serious. What Holtman said is he's going to be quote unquote fine after banging his foot. But he is in a boot, so maybe it's precautionary. I guess on the bright side, the game against Nebraska is canceled. Well, postponed, I guess, is the term. They're looking to reschedule. One, do you think this gets rescheduled? Two, do you think this even matters because it's Nebraska?
I do hope it gets rescheduled on the fact that it's a Big Ten game and it's a very winnable one.
That's a good point.
But like you said, if it's not something that's necessarily going to boost the resume more than it would, you know, reduce our resume if we were to lose. So it's either or in that situation.
I have no problem with it if we reschedule it. Cause I mean, with us slating in the IUPUI game too, it makes the week all right, in my opinion, because we still basically played a game this week. So it gives us, I guess, an extra time for some of these guys to heal up. So if Wheeler is hurt, you know, it's Suing's looking to hopefully come back soon.
Yeah, that'd be big.
That would be huge. And then we have, obviously, Michi, who it looks like he's ready to come back soon. So, I mean, we're looking to get healthy. That's the biggest thing. If we get those three playmakers back, that's huge. I mean, that's basically two guards and a wing. So that would be absolutely huge, I think, and would give this team a huge run up, huge boost for March. But I mean, that's really all I got on basketball, Grant. Do you have anything else?
Not necessarily. It's definitely big to have, you know, those guys coming back, guys like Michi that can stretch the floor. You know, he's willing to take a shot from anywhere on the floor, which is really key. But yeah, just being healthy in general would be really nice once you get into the heat of Big Ten play.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I think that's key. Coming up on the schedule for the basketball Buckeyes, let me pull up the schedule right here. We got our next opponent will be at Minnesota on the 27th, and then Purdue on the 30th, and then Iowa, and then Maryland. So, I mean, three out of those four games are pretty brutal, in my opinion.
It's a gauntlet. Yeah,
it's that even Iowa. They're not the same without Luka Garza, but that's still a very.
It's always good team. A tough test. Yeah.
But I mean, we'll see. But hopefully the Buckeyes can get healthy. But Grant, moving on, Ohio State football got some positive news this week. Some big names returning. First one, Noah Ruggles, starting kicker, Lou Groza Award finalist, All-American. Should have won the Lou Groza, in my opinion, but it's fine. He announces he's coming back. And then we get Big Thanos, DeJuan Jones, announces he's coming back. Not to anyone's surprise. I think a lot of people thought he was coming back. But, I mean, Grant, which one of these names that announced they're coming back is probably – who do you think is the most important one?
I think DeJuan is a huge piece just because of the way our line kind of would play inconsistently last year. You want someone who can add some camaraderie to the team, or specifically the line, of course. But, I mean, he's enormous in the first place. So having someone like that come back that you can plug in, that you can trust, and that can control, you know, the line of scrimmage, especially for the running game, which really down the stretch, you know, against Michigan and, you know, games like Oregon, we couldn't establish the run. And if we don't have the line playing consistently, we're going to be in trouble again, unfortunately. But, you know, next year's team is going to be a lot different. So, but, you know, my opinion, DeJuan will be the biggest piece coming back.
Yeah, I mean, literally, he is the biggest piece. I'm not. Yeah, he can't be wrong there. I mean, I guess from a strategic perspective, I would say they're both equally as important, to be honest. Just because, from what we got out of Ruggles this year, you could really make the argument that we don't beat Nebraska, Penn State, or win the Rose Bowl without him. And I know technically the game-winning kick in the Rose Bowl was a chip shot. So, but, it, I mean, he still made it. So you got to give him credit there. Against Nebraska, he made two huge, ridiculous field goals from the 40-yard range, which is – I mean, we only win that game by 9. And that is – that's just so critical, in my opinion, what he did there. And against Penn State, it's – we had those drives where, you know – We would have second and one or third and one inside their 10, and we just couldn't pick up these first downs. And just being able to rely on him to at least come away with points consistently, I think that's so overlooked. And I know people are saying, oh, well, you know, we need the offense to be better this year. And I agree at times. Yes, we do need the offense to be better. But it's just such a nice safety blanket knowing that we have a guy who, if we're inside, you know, the 30, we should at least be coming away with 3. Every time.
Yeah, it's really big having a consistent kicker. And I feel like, you know, in the Trestle days, that was something we never really had to worry about. But, you know, it was really rocky there for a while with, you know, when Urban was the coach and a little bit, you know, in the beginning of Ryan Day's, but, you know, having a guy like Ruggles that we could just plug in and count on is definitely a huge deal. Like you said, against, you know, games like Penn State where we stalled out in the red zone all the time, but we could count on points, and those points ended up being the difference. There's no doubt it's a big piece and something you don't have to worry about next year.
Yeah, I mean, it's with Ryan Day's offense too, you know they're going to get yards. They're going to pick up a couple first downs. It's rare, I think, for our offense to go 3 and out. It really is. Maybe once in a blue moon we do it. But for the most part, I think we're going to be able to hold the ball, get yards at will. It's just finishing the drives. But if we have a guy who can make those, get us 3 points, almost, it's almost at will too. It's you know, we can go down the field and get 3 points at will. It's the question is, can we get 7? I think that's just so overlooked. But I'm hyped. I'm so excited we're getting both back. But I mean, it's not that I don't think anyone was expecting us to lose DeWand or our kicker, but it's just nice to know that they're coming back. We do have a couple names that are still undecided. Mitch Rossi, our fullback tight end, jackknife, whatever he is undecided. And we also got, I mean, it doesn't look like he's coming back, but Seven Banks technically can come back. It sounds like he's definitely not going to come back to Ohio State, but that option still exists.
Yeah, I would expect Mitch Rossi, but, you know, who knows? Seven Banks, I'm sure he could find a spot on some NFL roster, you know, depending how he does on the combine. But I think he needs to come back. And I'm not, you know, obviously I'm an Ohio State fan, so I want everyone to come back. But it's I think he needs another year, especially with Knowles coming in.
Yeah.
To really just refine everything. I think he could have a lot better chance at raising his stock to becoming, you know, a top pick, 1, 2, 3 round pick.
It's weird too, because prior to the season, he was kind of seen as that. Maybe no later than a third, but I saw some people saying he could be as high as a first if he put in a good year. But now he's almost undraftable. Maybe in the 6th, 7th round, potentially. I could see a team taking a flyer. But I agree. I think he does need another year now at this point, just to kind of, you know, get his value back. Because he was playing hurt, according to what he was saying. But I mean, I would be fine with him coming back to Ohio State. I think it really couldn't hurt, considering we had, you know, a lot, like we had a couple corners leave. We had Watts hit the portal. Obviously Marcus Williamson, he's gone. But I mean, I would be fine with having Seven Banks back if we got the old Seven Banks. Now, if it's going to be the same, you know, scenario where he's not really playing much, he's banged up, then I'm okay with, you know, him leaving. But I think he's kind of an interesting wild card right now.
Yeah, it's a definitely unique situation, because it's almost like he's just trying to avoid any more plummeting of his draft stock, as opposed to trying to raise it, and you know, just trying to avoid putting any more bad tape out there, which I guess I understand if you're just trying to give yourself the best shot. But I think it's a really big opportunity if he comes back for him to you know, set himself up better for the future.
Yeah, I mean, I agree, but I mean, we'll see how that plays out.
Yeah,
it should be interesting to see how it plays out. Now, real quick before we get on to some of the fun stuff, two things I want to touch on. All Big 12 selection, Jerick Bernard Converse, JBC, people are calling him, Oklahoma State cornerback, is in the transfer portal. Do you think Ohio State makes a run if, you know, Seven Banks is officially gone?
I think you have to, both from a depth standpoint and the fact that, you know, Knowles is obviously familiar with him. So I think it's a no-brainer to at least try and get him in the building. Whether or not he can come in and contribute, I don't know. I don't know enough tape on him, but I feel like if he could, you know, put together some semblance of the season he had last year in the same system, it's something you got to at least try.
I mean, I feel like if you're an all Big 12 defender, you know how to at least play defense, because there's no conference that, you know, has more explosive offenses than the Big 12, in my opinion. I mean, on the season he put in last year, I'm looking at the stats, 51 tackles, no picks, but 11 pass deflections. He only has 2 interceptions in his career. But I mean, that doesn't mean you're not a good corner. It looks like, I mean, he's 6'1", 200 pounds. So not huge, but not undersized. I mean, I think it could work out. I don't think it hurts to call.
No, not at all.
It doesn't hurt to bring him in, at least get him on campus. And then, you know, if the fit's not there, fine. But if, you know, he comes to Ohio State, loves Columbus, you know, jives well with the players immediately, why not?
Yeah, it's, you have to at least try. I don't see why not. You got to have someone on the other side of Denzel Burke.
Yeah, I agree. And real quick, moving on. Last week when we had, with Cass and Blake, we were talking about, you know, Kerry Combs and Al Washington. It was the day that, you know, they announced that they're, you know, no longer going to be on the staff. Well, we come to find out now Al Washington is going to Notre Dame and Kerry Combs is going to Cincinnati. Just real quick, initially, what are your thoughts on both of those moves?
I was kind of intrigued by Combs joining UC staff because, to my understanding, at least to what I thought he was going to retire to his new house in Tennessee and kind of ride off into the sunset. But I guess Fickell had other plans and convinced him to, you know, come be a part of something special down in UC, which I guess I can't blame him, but that's just where I was coming from. And it's interesting to see Notre Dame kind of become an Ohio State North, if you will.
Just
racking up all kinds of former coaches and players up there.
Yeah, I mean, it is interesting what they're going with. They really are poaching all former Ohio State players, and it's interesting. I don't know if it's going to pay off for them, though, when we play in week one. I think it's going to actually add fuel to our fire. With Combs, I mean, that shocked me. Maybe that's not the right term. I was surprised, but I understand it because he is a UC guy. I mean, he is from the Cincinnati area. It's him going to coach UC. It seems like a chance for him to kind of revitalize his career if he wanted to continue to become a defensive coordinator somewhere else. But also, I feel like it's not as stressful, to be honest, for him if he just goes there and what he's doing now, because they have good expectations, but it's not Ohio State expectations right now. It's really not. And I could totally see potentially, call me crazy, if he does a good job there for a year or two, Fickell moves on, maybe he even gets a head coaching shot.
Yeah, it's definitely realistic because, you know, every year Fickell is going to be at the top of everyone's list. So if he's in line to wait, take that job, it's a good plan on him. And it's definitely realistic if he's stepping into that role already.
Yeah, I just think it's a good job for him just to kind of get his feet set. It's not going to be super stressful. You're coaching UC DBs. The American Conference isn't lighting up cornerbacks, I'm pretty sure, even when they move to the Big 12. So I think it's a nice, easy, it's not a retirement gig, but it's, you know, it's like a part-time job, I feel like. And like from his perspective, it'd be like almost like working full-time to, you know, taking 20-hour shifts.
Yeah, it's probably he's probably going to take more of a recruiting angle, if I had to guess.
Yeah.
Which is probably what he's best at this point. So I definitely – I credit Fickell for that move. For sure.
It's a good move. I think it really is. What is – speaking, I guess, of retirement, if you told me that Kerry Combs was going to coach this season before, you know, Tate Martell retired, I'd say, oh, this is crazy. But Ohio State legend Tate Martell no longer playing football, Grant. Kind of surprising, but not really too surprising. What were your thoughts on that?
Early on, I would have been surprised. I mean, he was the national Gatorade Player of the Year in high school. Yeah. So it's kind of, it's weird to see his regression in just a 3-year period. But I mean, he was the third or fourth string at Ohio State. And then he was turned into a wide receiver at Miami. And then he was, you know, in the basement of the depth chart at UNLV, who were, if I'm not mistaken, winless until maybe the last game of the season this year. So I don't know what happened there. I think his priorities probably out of whack, if I had to guess. But you know, he had plenty of talent. It's weird to see that, you know, even with a, I think a year of eligibility left at this point. So
it's honestly insane, but it's, yeah, I mean, his career lasted from 2017 to 2021. One, two, three, four, 5 seasons in college football.
Yeah.
He, in 5 seasons, he threw 1 touchdown pass and 2 rushing touchdowns. And I was actually at that game. So I saw in person, and I saw his first and last ever touchdown passes and touchdowns. So it's just crazy, though, that, like you said, he's the Gatorade Player of the Year. And I will say this, I do think Miami kind of ruined him. I think Miami did a terrible job in bringing him along, because let's be honest, he wasn't that bad when he left Ohio State, but he regressed an insane amount the second he left.
Yeah, I think, I'm sure it's hard to go to Miami and be told, hey, you probably should play receiver, and to tell them that you don't want to. But that doesn't help anybody, you know, putting a guy who never played wide receiver, who's undersized, at wide receiver just because, you know, you don't want to take up a spot in the depth chart when you could develop him and see what you have in him. So it was just so weird. It was really weird to see him so quickly, you know, change his position like that and just kind of be in limbo for years. And then, you know, obviously finish out at UNLV.
Yeah, what's crazy though is like Jaren Williams started over him, and Jaren Williams at Miami wasn't lighting the world on fire. I think it was one season he had like not even over 20 touchdown passes. I think it was like close to 19. Wasn't really a threat on the ground, and a guy like that beat him out. And it's just I'm almost questioning Miami's coaching staff. Well, I am questioning them because I know they're not good. But yeah, I am questioning.
Diaz isn't there anymore. So.
Yeah, there's a reason why they have Mario Cristobal. It just begs the question. You know, I'm curious if he had maybe a different offensive coordinator, head coach, if they would have brought him along better. I remember when he was, you know, looking to transfer, he was looking at West Virginia. That was a big school along with Miami. It's almost – I bet you if he went to West Virginia, I think his career might have panned out a little better, in my opinion, because at least I think West Virginia, offensively, they have a better identity than Miami, and I think he would have had a chance to make some big plays in the Big 12.
As well as there's going to be a heck of a lot less distraction in West Virginia than there is Miami.
Oh, well, yeah.
And I think for a guy like him, he was very conscious of his image, if you will, on social media. So he might have got wrapped up and, you know, a little distracted, you know, going to a place like Miami where it's almost impossible not to.
Well, so you're totally right. And there was a joke, Grant, basically when he was on campus that, when he first joined, and like, I remember people were saying, oh, the girls are going to love Tate at Midway because I mean, he literally looks like a frat guy. Yeah. And I remember I specifically saw him at Bullwinkle's literally. I know.
Not where you want to be. Yeah.
Not where you want to see the Gatorade Player of the Year, but it was, I was a senior, so I was fine, but I literally saw him at Bullwinkle's. buying shots, and he actually like gave me a what's up, and I was like, oh, what's up, because I knew he was with someone else I knew, and he was literally at Bullwinkle's, and it was when he was like an early enrollee, so it was like that February. I literally saw him there, and then, but I will give him credit, I did also see him out on the practice fields like the Lincoln Tower fields, throwing the football mm-hmm. with some receivers too in his free time. So the guy just went hard. He partied mm-hmm. hard, worked hard, but it just didn't work out.
Yeah, it's definitely could be a victim of circumstance, which is tough to see. But I definitely wish him the best of luck apart from football. And I think he's a bright enough kid that he'll figure it out. Just it's a weird situation overall for sure.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's going to be fine. I mean, with his Instagram and his Twitter account, they have so many followers.
He's got exposure.
Tons, yeah. He'll be fine. I mean, he'll be pushing a crypto or NFT or something. Mm-hmm. He'll be fine.
Mm-hmm.
But before we get into our picks, I do want to touch upon the rumors. Jim Harbaugh to the Raiders. Do you think it's going to happen?
I mean, I think, at least what the reports say, if he gets offered the job, I think he's taking it. I think that guy is itching for maybe a change of, I guess a change of scenery, if you will, but also a change of expectation to a certain extent. I think he's dealt an interesting hand at Michigan. I think they expect a whole lot out of him and his teams than they're capable of right now. You know, the year that Michigan had this year, that's probably about as good a team as you're going to get at Michigan right now. And that's just, and I know people rag on him, but he's done about as good as a job as you can do there. I think there's a few games against Michigan State, you know, he probably should have pulled out, especially, you know, the punt, the drop punt and stuff like that, you know, and obviously this year they were just dropping the ball in the most inopportune times. But I think he's kind of burnt out there to a certain extent. And I think he wants a fresh start in the NFL. He built up San Francisco to something. And I think he left a little early, but, you know, obviously Michigan was a dream job for him. I think he wants to head out to the West Coast again and have his second shot at this NFL gig. That being said, I think Bisaccia, you know, the way he captivated that team and the way they finished out the year, it's really hard to bet against that guy, especially if you're, you know, he's already in place there. You know, you wouldn't have to change a single thing. So it's an interesting situation over there.
It's tough to read. I thought he was just kind of trying to position himself for a big
payday. Yeah, blowing smoke. Yeah.
But I mean, the more you look at it, I think he definitely could be gone. Just because, I mean, it's not even what he did. It's not even the expectations. I think the university as a whole has a ton of issues right now. One, they don't even have a president. Their president just got fired. Fired Schlissel. They have an intern, Mary Sue Coleman, right now. So they just kind of have an interim president. They don't have a true president. Meanwhile, they're paying out $490 million to settle that abuse case. So, I mean, that's a huge chunk of change coming out of that university. So when you look at it, they don't have any leadership. They don't have a president. They're losing, you know, basically $500 million. How much money and time and effort and resources are they going to put back into the football program? And I think that's something he wants. I think he wants the university to be aligned like Ohio State is. Because, I will say you are absolutely right, because Michigan, they don't – it's not their number one priority. Ohio State, it's – we make it a priority, and that's the difference.
And they kind of plateau themselves, and I think that's what you see. And like you said, it's – he doesn't have quite the support from the university than he would like. And, you know, I think even through COVID, they kind of showed that when, you know, Michigan was a really big impediment to, you know, getting that season started. They really, the president just was not on board with it. And I think you saw the difference in what he has to deal with year in and year out.
Yeah. It's, I mean, I wouldn't even say it's the fan base at this. It's just it's the people he's dealing with. I think his fan base, he's exonerated after the season. I think the fans will love to have him back. I know Ohio State fans would love to have him back. I'll personally kick in for him to stay. I don't want to see him go, but you may also made a great point about Rich Bisaccia. I think the Raiders players love him. I don't know how much that will go with ownership, but Bisaccia did a very good job, in my opinion. They put up a good fight against the Bengals, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anything that happened in that game really was an indictment on him. I think there was, you know, the officiating the whole game was a cesspool. I mean, they were lost the whole game.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, Derek Carr gets strip sacks, you know, just a couple inopportune mistakes. And, you know, it's in the NFL, it becomes a very, you know, who has your back kind of deal. And if the players can play for you, I think we saw that with Urban Meyer. You know, the players did not have his back at all. And he was out before the season even ended. But when the players respect and, you know, they have a resounding support, I think it goes a long way if you can find the right coaching staff to surround them.
I totally agree. And I think this is a good segue to start doing our NFL picks, Grant. So I'll lead it off. Divisional round, first game of the weekend. Your Bengals travel to Nashville to take on the one seed Tennessee Titans. Should I even ask who you're taking? Because I know who you're going to take, but I just want to hear it.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Bengals. I'm going to come out from off a limb there, you know, and really take a chance. But I think I see the Lions at 3.5. I think they're going to cover that. I think it's going to be a one score game, but I think it's going to be more than 3.5. It's going to come down to, slowing down Derrick Henry and, you know, and seeing how healthy he is down the stretch of the game. But I think the Bengals have an edge here.
I picked the Titans as my Super Bowl. I believe I picked them as my Super Bowl favorite to go to the Super Bowl from the AFC.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. So I got to go with the Titans, but this is definitely, I always do once a week, like your keep your eye on it game, a game that like I think there would be an upset. And I would say keep your eye on this one because I can see the Bengals winning this. I would not be shocked. I'm going with the Titans, though, just because they're my Super Bowl pick. But what the Bengals did against the Raiders, they really impressed me. So I would not be shocked if they did pull off the upset, but I will go with the Titans.
Not surprised. I would too if I were picking them as a Super Bowl favorite.
Yeah. So. And then we got the next game, Saturday night, 8:15, 49ers, Packers. This is an interesting one. It's the QB comparison is stark, to say the least. Who you got on this one?
You know, I can't go against the Packers and Lambeau in 13 degree weather, but I think it's going to be a little closer than people think, just based on the fact that the way the Niners run the ball, and we saw the Cowboys game, that translates anywhere at any time.
It does.
And especially in weather like that, I would not be the least bit surprised if, you know, the Niners at least cover this. You know, it's 5.5 right now. You know, if it's a field goal game at the end of the day, I'm not surprised. I think it's going to be a lot closer than people think. But, Rodgers at home in the playoffs, I think I'm giving the edge to the Niners here, or the Packers.
I'm going to go out on a limb here and go with the Niners for all the reasons you said. I think also they have the better kicker right now, Robbie Gould. They run the ball better. I think they have the better defense. And for some reason, I'm pretty sure Rodgers always struggles against the Niners. I don't know if that's a stat or not, but it feels like it's a stat.
When he's in San Francisco, he tends to, I think it might be playing back home against the team that you know, he grew up wanting to play for might be a little bit of a mental thing for him. It could be very possible. But, you know, at Lambeau, I think for some reason that guy turns into the crazy, like a man possessed. So, like, I mean, you're right. The Niners are definitely the more physical team too, mm-hmm. which is why I think it's going to be a really close game. I just think Rodgers finds ways to win in these games. I'm not incredibly confident. So I could see it either way.
That's fair. I agree with that. Sunday, 3:30, NFC Divisional. Rams travel to Tampa Bay. This one's going to be a fun one, I think. This one has a chance to be a shootout. Well, the next two do, actually. This one has track meet kind of written all over it, though, mm-hmm. in my opinion, with with LA's high-powered offense. And then Tampa, obviously, TB12 and company. Grant, who you got on this one?
I like the way the Rams played down the stretch, and I really would love to see Matt Stafford, you know, make a run at this. But it's tough because the Rams can look just really, really lost at times. And, you know, Tom Brady at home, I don't know if I can pick, you know, against Matt Stafford. He's new to this. He's going to be in a hostile environment. I think I'm going to have to go with the Bucks.
I mean, I'll never pick against TB12, so
yeah.
I'm going with the Buccaneers. It seems like it's foolish to pick against the Bucks, so I'll go with the Bucks in this case.
Yeah.
And then we got to wrap it up. This the games this week are really going to be good. I think
mm-hmm.
no spreads bigger than 5.5. So all these should mm-hmm. be close. We got Bills versus Chiefs Sunday 6:30. I'm going with the Bills here. I think what we saw them do to New England, they impressed me. I think they're a better football team right now than the Chiefs, and I think they're going to be out for vengeance after last year's AFC championship.
Yeah, I'm going with the Bills too. I've been really high on them throughout the past couple of weeks, just mm-hmm. and especially after that New England game they played. Maybe one of the most perfect games in the history of the NFL. Josh Allen hasn't played better at any point in his career. The Chiefs, they kind of find ways to let teams back into games and not finish. And I think this Bills team is on too much of a high to let this slip away from them.
I will say too, they did beat them in Arrowhead week 10,
mm-hmm.
38-20. So, yeah. I mean, that's a considerable margin. That's not a fluke.
No, I think they're just, they're obviously, again, they're definitely a more physical team too. And in the playoffs, that plays pretty big.
I do agree. They definitely are more physical. I think they run the ball better than the Chiefs too. The Chiefs have better running backs, but I think the Bills, the Bills can actually run it if they had to. Like, gun to their head, they're going to run it. The Chiefs, mm-hmm. I don't think they can really get a push. I think Clyde Edwards-Helaire is a good running back, but I think if you put him on Buffalo, he would be a much better – he would have much better stats.
Yeah, it's a little different, the Chiefs, because they spread the defense out and they try and get guys like, you know, Jerick McKinnon had that big week. He's coming on. So they just try to get guys who can kind of make plays in space. Whereas, like you said, the Bills, they can go man on man and just kind of, you know, impose their will if they want to. And that's really big.
Absolutely. I mean, Devin Singletary has kind of come on too of late. Yeah. Two touchdowns. That's a man. And you look at his numbers too. He's a guy who had a sneaky all right
season.
Here's a guy, exactly. No, but seriously, 870 yards, 7 touchdowns, 228 receiving yards, a touchdown. Like, that's a solid fantasy season. It's not mm-hmm. – I'm not saying Devin Singletary is, you know, the next Ezekiel Elliott, but it's
no.
all back. Zach Moss, he's a power runner, I think. From what I've seen, he can get a push. So I like the Bills on the ground for some reason. Maybe I'm just hyping him up too much, but
–
No, I mean, hey, then nobody circles the wagon like the Bills. So it's, you know, you have to roll with it at this point.
Exactly. I love it. I love it. But I mean, that's all I got for today, Grant. Do you have anything else before I wrap us up?
No, I it was a pleasure coming on. I hope your listeners enjoyed the little change of pace. But you know, anytime you want to have me on, just let me know.
Absolutely. And where can our listeners follow you so we can get all your writing and all your social and all that?
Well, yeah, so my writing will be online to silverbulletin.com. So you can find that link, you know, on our Twitter or Instagram. And then all my socials will be Kincaid8. So hit me up with a follow if you feel it.
Awesome. They definitely will. Thank you so much for coming on, Grant. And as always, for those listening, thank you so much for listening to the Bunch of Nuts podcast. And as always, go Bucks.